Bridge.
Hello, Hepton.
This is the Left of Left Field radio show with Mark Charnock.
And Paul Cuss. Why are we doing
really
like
formal, really weirdly formal.
Good evening.
This is our route to the BBC, right?
Let's
here.
Have a song.
This is Blue Oyster Cult and In Thee.
Song. Yeah. I wrap myself in tea.
No, it's not the same though, is it?
No, it's not as beautifully poetic.
No. I mean, in the, admittedly, crowbarring the rhyming in there, Blue Oyster Cult, but it's a really good song. It's from an album called Mirrors.
Yeah.
I'm a Blue Oyster Cult nerd, which brings us on to the
show.
Yeah,
so cast your mind back a little while to October 2016. Do you know what we were doing?
I think you're about to tell me, and an excited audience.
They were, what's happening? Well, we had just joined Hebden Radio.
Yeah, we've been doing a podcast.
We've been
left
doing
left
a podcast,
field for some years.
And we met the lovely Dave, and they were looking for things for the radio, for Hebden Radio, and he said, "Why don't you bring your podcast? We'll put music in it."
With a terrified look on his face,
and here we are, a big 50. 50 shows later.
So we thought we'd do something different today.
Yeah, because what else is happening not very far away?
My 50th is coming up. Yeah. It's like sort of rearing, it's like this monster over the hill.
I've got quite some time before I get there, young man.
Not that much time, yeah.
So we thought we'd kind of do a bit of a show. We're not going to have any of our features. Anybody waiting for Riddell?
We're just going to have 45 minutes of silence. Thanks for listening.
So we're going to do it in sort of decades, we thought. We look at the 70s, 80s.
Things that we like during each decade.
Things that kind of influenced us at that time. Mm. And so our music choices will reflect that.
And we're going to talk about music and books and films and stuff like that. Yeah. So basically, we do a feature every time we do a show called Swellowell at the end, where we recommend something that we like. This is basically going to be a show full of Swellowells from the past.
They're a bit dated, some
of them. No. You'll enjoy this because you'll go, oh yeah, I like that too.
So one of the things that was big for me in the 70s, which is not one of my choices, but I've put it in here as a musical choice. Jesus Christ Superstar.
And this is a mystery to everybody.
I know. In our family, it was massive. We watched the... It was my dad's favourite musical. We watched the film lots, and if ever we have family occasions, my wedding was one of them, we all just burst into songs from Jesus Christ Superstar, and one of the best ones to do is King Herod's song.
Oh, good Lord.
King of the Jews!
I don't know where to start with that choice. It's utterly bizarre.
If we have any listeners left, carry on. So we've realised that because this is a bit different, we don't really know how to time these sections.
Yeah.
So we're going to have a little clue from Mark when we need to go to a song.
Song time! I'll show that in a slightly panicky voice.
1970, mate.
Right, so we're going to talk about things we liked in the 70s. Yeah. We're going to do four things each. So it's going to be TV, music, writers and books, and film.
And film,
mate, why don't you start?
So TV in the 70s, absolutely the Incredible Hulk. The Incredible Hulk
was a great choice.
I shared a birthday
Lou
with
Lou Ferrigno.
I shared a birthday with him, 9th of November.
I thought you were going to say I shared a birthday party, and I thought that's so impressive.
And he came, it was brilliant, but
he absolutely battered you and walked
off. But he wore a clown outfit. Nobody wanted to see him in a clown outfit. No. So that was big for me. What was yours, TV?
Mine was Kung Fu.
Kung Fu?
With David Carradine.
Oh, and the reason, and they're very similar in a way, aren't they?
And it was just that sort of like, I wasn't really able to watch it because I was really quite young when it was on. It was in the sort of early to mid 70s. But mum and dad, it was the thing, so can I watch it from the top of the stairs? Yeah. Okay, come down. And I used to watch it, and it was because it was always a kind of revenge, and the good guy, there was always great bad guys in it.
Yeah.
And it was just the fact that it was so cool, that his karate was so cool, that he was a man of peace. But then.
But he was a wandering nomad, just like David Banner.
He was very, very Clint Eastwood-y.
Yeah.
That sort of silent, deadly kind of, oh, I love Kung Fu was a big deal for me.
Brilliant. So film. Have you got a film?
Yeah, I've got a film. So much to choose from. I was thinking about kids' films because of the age I was at, but the films that I was exposed to most when I was in the 70s were John Wayne films because my parents loved John Wayne.
And Elvis for me as well. But
right, yes, absolutely. Yeah. But the biggest John Wayne film of that time for me was True Grit.
Yeah.
So he played Rooster Cogburn, hired by this girl to go out and get the bad guys. And again, it was revenge stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and it, but my parents just, he was this emblem of manliness and, you know, and later you kind of find out, as an adult, you find out what a right wing son of a gun he was. And you kind of think, kind of, there's a different agenda going on there. But True Grit's so entertaining.
Yeah,
the Coen brothers remade it
brilliantly,
recently,
remade,
but not as good, I didn't think.
Well, it was a great film, just different. So, I really wanted to kind of like go Star Wars or something like that, which was very big for me. But, to be honest, the one that was really big for me was Grease.
It's a group, mate.
I know, but you know when you want to like, you want to reflect a history that you didn't really
it was
have.
Like, but it was like a sort of history. Yeah. It was hysteria about that film.
I know,
at the time.
It was great.
Look, John Travolta was the ultimate pin.
Me and Dennis
so
Martin. There's that scene where Zuko and what's his Kaneki.
Yeah.
And he says, "I'll be your second," and they hug.
Yeah.
And then they realize people are looking. They pull apart.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was really that show of masculinity. Yeah. I remember being embarrassed about it. We used to do that at the swimming baths. We'd hug and then pull apart and then jump in the swimming pool.
It is problematic in some ways, Grease, especially with what happens at the end, how she changes to please him, but it's really an entertaining film. What about music, man?
Oh,
what was your music choice from the set?
It was Jesus Christ Superstar, actually. I just realised, because it was going to be a Grease song, but I picked Jesus Christ Superstar.
Well, mine was Blue Oyster Cult, because it was the first band,
and that was
the first song we listened to tonight. The first band that I started collecting vinyl of and like sending off for vinyl and becoming obsessed with them. And then eventually I saw them in the very early 80s in Manchester, and they were like a thing in my head. They were a thinking person's rock band. They were everything AC/DC weren't. They were like they were quite intellectual and
unsuccessful.
I mean, their most famous song people don't know is Don't Fear the Reaper, which everybody will know. But for me they were just so cool.
So books. Yeah. Well, I didn't go. I'd like to say, Sherlock Holmes and stuff like that. It was actually a comic. It was
go on.
Roy of the Rovers.
Yeah. Oh, Paul! My dad used to bring it me every Saturday.
That's all I was reading in the 70s, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose it was like the Enid Blyton's, your things like your Secret Sevens and all sort of stuff like that. But I've got to say, Roald Dahl, I know it's a cliche, but there was a book, Danny the Champion of the World, for me, was the book.
The whole thing
the
of putting tranquilizers in raisins, I don't know, that really stuck
it just
with
seemed
me.
And the fact that they lived in that amazing little caravan and they were talking poaching and the bad guys were so brilliant. Yeah. Oh, Danny the Champion of the World still stays with me to this day.
I meant to say about The Incredible, I know you're going to sing for a song in a minute, you're going to do your chime for a song, but I had a very seminal moment where worlds collided with my best friend Aidan Baines at the time. He had a very gorgeous older sister, and I was at his house one time and she sat down and I was like having a bit of just laying on the sofa snoozing a little bit, and she came in not realising I was there and played the theme tune to The Incredible Hulk, and it was just like,
and you thought, this is her way of
collided.
Coming on to me.
she's
going to be my girlfriend now. Song time. Okay, so what's coming up now? Okay, alright. Oh, this is fantastic. This is the House Martins in Happy Hour. Saw them live the other night. Well, him and Jackie Abbott, fantastic.
Yeah.
Right,
1980s.
So we're up to the 1980s.
Yeah,
I look so cool in the 80s with my bubble hair and my rolled up jacket and my Miami Vice style. So, TV series, 1980s. I was going to say 30 something. Remember 30 something?
That's my choice.
Actually, it's not going to be my choice, but that was for me the first like box setty television.
Me too.
But instead of that, I watched a documentary on Rick Mail the other night, and I realised actually the defining series for me was The Young Ones in the 80s.
Not for me, it's really weird. I just wasn't a Young Ones. All of my mates loved it.
I think it's because it was so for young people.
I think do you know what? It's because you're a couple of years older than me. I think that's what it is. When it was.
Yeah, maybe that is it. Actually,
I think it just didn't get me.
There's a tampon joke in it that my dad really disapproved of, and I knew that was that's what made it cool. Yeah. You know, Rick Mayall is still very, very, very funny. Indeed.
I just loved that 30 something for me was just fantastic TV. Yeah. It had that group of characters who've all gone off to do amazing stuff, and there was an episode where one of the most popular characters died. The whole episode was done backwards, so you don't know what's happened.
Yeah,
and I'd never seen that done before.
Yeah,
and so I think it really appealed to me as a storyteller.
The main guy he's become a really successful TV
Timothy
director.
Busfield,
Ken Olin. Successful TV director.
Cool.
So what about films, mate? What about films of the 80s? Can you pick one?
Here we go.
The look on your face tells me it's going to be something really nice.
I used to be a milkman, right? And I used to have to get up. I know.
Just drop that in like it's nothing.
And I had to get up. I can't believe my parents let me. I had to get up at like 4:30 in the morning to be picked up at 5, do 2 hours as a milkman, and then go to school.
What?
I know. But the one thing that woke me up every day was watching the ending of the same film I used to watch. It was a 20-minute thing while I ate my breakfast. Yeah. It's Rocky. Rocky 2. So it's the Rocky films.
Got the box set. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. The first two are brilliant. It gets a bit rogue.
Of course it does.
Although the Creed film that came out.
I love the Creed one. I'm looking forward to it. Yeah. I think
my film was a lifetime obsession with going to the cinema on my own. I'd been to see Arthur, and I was going to go on my own, and parents wouldn't let me, so they sent me with my Uncle John. I loved it. But I went to see, when I was in the sixth form, Aliens, right? I'd seen the original, seen the Alien film, the Ridley Scott. This was like a much bigger, more macho thing. Aliens, I went on my own in the middle of the day, and I remember coming out and thinking, I'm never going to get over this.
Yeah.
I'm never going to get over this excitement. Yeah. And I never really have.
Yeah. Because this is this period is where we were got.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
We were got
by whatever it is, as my music choice will be in a bit.
Absolutely.
But before that, books. So I started reading all the classics. I'd left school at 16, and I learned to read for love, which rather than for education.
Yeah.
And that's when I discovered the one author who has stayed with me my entire life. I just think she's amazing, Joan Didion.
Oh, you love Joan
Didion. I think
she's
one of the finest writers around. So she is absolutely my choice.
Well, it's the decade I fell in love with reading novels for the sake of reading novels.
Stephen King.
And unapologetically Stephen King, who has become a sort of man of American letters in these latter years. But at the time, he was just a commercial kind of horror writer. But there's Salem's Lot, Pet Sematary, The Stand, all those great... I mean, some of them came out in the 70s, but the 80s block it was just a sort of like one hit after another.
Yeah.
And his short stories were amazing as well. And he's the man who, that homespun, normal American family life... at which something extraordinary and disgusting was happening at the same time. He makes you feel like he was just telling you the story out loud.
Absolutely.
And he was the first writer I ever felt that with.
Brilliant. He's absolutely brilliant. And so my choice, The Smiths, they were big for me. Yeah. And this is Cemetery Gates.
Yeah, brilliant. If only you'd shut up after that.
Yeah, but we can keep the Smiths.
Okay.
You can stick your mouth up your bum.
Yeah. He just needs to stop talking, really.
So, 1990.
Oh, the 90s. Yes. Haircuts getting a bit better now. A little bit.
Jobs, stuff like that, you know, growing up.
But labour, all that sort of stuff, you know.
Eventually. And so what TV?
TV, right, okay. So there's a lot here. I'm going to go for another comedy one. I was going to go for Frasier.
Yeah.
Because it was unmissable, television, especially the first... I mean, it was... six or seven series of that were good. Usually, comedies stop after three series. It was consistently good until they put Niles and that Manchester woman together, and then they blew it. That's when it jumped the shot. Yeah. But the one I'm going to pick is The Day Today. Chris Morris, Steve Coogan, Armando Iannucci, just the genius, satirical best. I remember watching it by accident thinking, what's this documentary about? And then realising it was a spoof news series that is still daring and funny to this day. Chris Morris is... an absolute hero of mine. So mine's The Day Today.
I think I probably came to The Day Today later than it was actually on. You know, I rediscovered it after Brass Eye.
Yeah.
But actually, the one that I picked is it's not a million miles away from 30 something. It's ER.
Oh, great!
Again, it was just good serial TV for me, and I could watch it with my mum and
very well written.
Just brilliant, and so ER.
And they were some of the first dramas to do live episodes.
Yeah,
amazing. Yeah. What about film, mate?
Oh, film! Absolute classic, Fargo.
Do you know, I love it. The 90s. How funny, because the series has been brilliant as well.
Yeah, but it's a tough, it's a tough decade, this one.
Yeah, it is.
Because it's the you know, TV, I don't think, goes in anywhere near what it is now. But film, I think this is a golden.
Because I was going to go for Reservoir Dogs, right? Which is just obviously amazing. And Tarantino explodes onto the scene out of nowhere. But actually, the one I'm going to pick just for pure enjoyment's sake is Seven.
Yes,
it's David Fincher like emerging onto the Hollywood main and Brad Pitt is really underrated. He's really brilliant in that film.
Absolutely,
he's
really
Morgan Freeman's doing his brilliant Morgan Freeman, but Brad Pitt is amazing, and it's really unrelentingly dark but incredibly slick and incredibly gripping. So mine's what else? Writers.
And another hero of mine that I discovered in my 20s, this is Kurt Vonnegut. And I heard some, Ethan Hawke was actually saying in an interview that he feels like we're living in a Kurt Vonnegut novel at the moment. You can see that, the way that Trump, you know, the idea that Trump would be president and some of the things that are happening, they are Kurt Vonnegut storylines. And if you've never read him, I'd urge everybody to get them. He's very funny, but he just makes you see a world through different eyes.
Mine is John Irving, who I know was writing big novels in the 80s, but Irving I came to in the early 90s. I fell in love with a novel called A Prayer for Owen Meany, which is the only novel that's ever made me properly sob,
vocally sob
out loud. But not that it's a downer novel, it's a brilliant novel. But The World According to Garp is another classic.
It's a great film as well, actually. Underrated film.
This guy's written so many. The Cider House Rules, everyone. He's quite Dickensian, I guess.
Yeah,
but I think he's friends with Stephen King and they're from the same area, and he's just got that, again, that kind of like, there's an eccentricity, but it's homespun. Yeah. Oh, wonderful writer. Which brings me to my song choice. So I saw Prince in 1992 at Main Road in Manchester, and I only picked this song because this was with the New Power Generation, and this is Diamonds and Pearls. You're welcome. It's gone.
It's gone.
Yeah. Oh, it has gone. Anyway.
Didn't we do that with Barry last
time? Yeah, Prince has literally. Oh, bless him. He's my celebrity I miss most.
He also, 2016 obviously.
2016 cull of all my heroes.
Obviously, one of his more famous ones was 1999. And we are now moving into 2000.
Well done, mate. That's clever DJing. An actual round of applause. I must get a round of applause from Dave.
It was a link preceded with some of the worst mumbling I've ever done. I don't think... If you go back and listen, there was a sentence there I don't think anybody understood.
Barely English, mate. Oh, so we're in the 2000s.
Yeah. So TV, for me, absolutely hands down The Wire. If anybody has got any, like, what is the one TV series you should watch, it is The Wire. 5 series, David Simon, through using the city of Baltimore, taking on, firstly, drugs. The second series was working class.
Education.
Third series was the police. Fourth was education, and the fifth was the press.
Yeah,
and with a multi-narrative cast that was just amazing.
Loads of local people who'd never acted before.
Some of the best writing you'll ever see.
Yeah.
You have to watch
it. He's a thorn in Trump's side as well. He continues to be really political. Yeah. Mine is a bit of a cheat, actually. It's because I didn't start watching the show until the noughties.
Right,
is The West Wing.
Yeah.
I mean, I know it's a 90s show, but I think it ended in the 90s, so it's an old
90s. Absolutely.
It's just, Aaron Sorkin's writing is absolutely remarkable all the way through. It's absolutely brilliant performances.
It's
and
the world you wish you lived in as well.
You just wish around the world.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's just, if those people, those characters were real around the world, we'd be in a much better place right now.
You could sub that down to if Aaron Sorkin ran the world, but I think he'd probably agree with that, which is where he tips.
I just think it's just a magnificent... it's just a magnificent act of liberal politicising television in a way that you can't believe he got away with, really, consider how right wing those TV channels can be.
So film. I picked this because I kind of had to go, what changed my... Because at that time I was a professional writer and I was looking at things. So anyway, it was Charlie Kaufman, because he had Being John Malkovich, which was in 1999, followed by Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Yeah.
And Adaptation, which was an adaptation of the book Adaptation.
It's a Nick Cage film,
No, it's a very unusual film.
Nicolas Cage is in it, isn't he?
Oh, sorry, yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
I thought you said Nick Cave.
Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds were not in adaptation.
Yeah, and Confessions of a Serious Mind as well.
Yeah.
And so he had these films, and he was a writer that was doing stuff in scripts that were just not being done.
I don't know how
he
got them made, though.
I know.
Films.
You wouldn't get them made nowadays. So for me, that was just seminal at that time.
Well my film is sort of, it's more of a genre, really, I guess, or actually it's more of a country. The noughties where I got to understand Korean and appreciate Korean cinema. South Korean cinema is absolutely remarkable, and in particular there's a thing called the Vengeance Trilogy, which is Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance, Old Boy, which is the most famous of the three, and Lady Vengeance, all directed by Park Chan-wook. Yeah, and then there was a film called Memories of Murder, which remains the best serial killer film I've ever seen.
Absolutely.
That's Bong Joon-ho, and The Handmaiden, of course. You know, anyway, the South Korean cinema for me, there is problems with it because there are some films, not these ones, but there are some films where they're not great on women, actually.
Yeah. Yeah.
But just as pure, just colourful, textured, daring filmmaking, at that time, South Korean cinema for me was the best in the world.
Yeah, totally.
And it's also, they've got the best leading man in the world, who's Song Kang-ho, who is, he's like the De Niro of South Korean cinema. And if you've not seen Song Kang-ho, Google him and watch his films, because I guarantee you'll enjoy them.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Fantastic. And so...
Writing.
Writing.
Of course.
He's been my Swallowell many, many times. This is the era that I got James Lee Burke for the first time.
Oh, mate.
Yeah. And he's still with me now. We'll read every one of his books. We've talked about him many times on the show, so I don't need to carry on.
Well, I'm going to do a slightly controversial one, about the writing. It's J.K. Rowling.
Oh, yeah.
Well, because
I
just think she changed writing for kids.
Yeah.
I listened to the first one, the famous Stephen Fry versions of the novels, and listened to them being read. And I just thought, this is just great writing.
Yeah.
It's just great writing. And it engaged a whole global generation of kids to reread. And I think she deserves all the credit.
Yeah. Fantastic. So musically, my music choice this time, again, I'm going with that thing of just people doing stuff with music that's just not been done, and I felt like that's what Tricky was doing, and he did it incredibly well, and this is Hell Is Round the Corner. That sounded very DJs,
like,
didn't it?
Dave was just saying how many times that
song was
sampled.
Well, it came out at the same time as the Portishead song, which I think is Sour Times, I can't remember, and they use the same sample. So if you like the Portishead song, you'll recognise it, and they were both...
It's not big on laughs.
Tricky.
That piece of music. It's not, you know... You're not going to sit there with a big smile on your face.
A lot of my music's not
big on
laughs.
You're going to sit there sort of nodding, melancholy, like, you know, perhaps with your hand on your chin. Going, what he did there.
Yeah, reading Stephen
Clever.
King.
Yeah, exactly. Listen, I don't know if you'd want to, but let's throw this into the mix. You can get in touch with us.
You can. Tell us your choices.
On Twitter. That's a great idea. Do let us know, actually. Yeah. I'm at Mark Charnock on Twitter.
And I'm at Paul Coates _ on Twitter.
And you can get in touch with the radio station on Twitter. That's Hebden, at Hebden _ radio.
Yeah, the website is www.
Go on.
www.hebdenradio.co.uk.
Yeah. Okay. Let's do the. It's the time for the tens. I don't know what
we're
going to
split these up. So we'll just
what do you call this decade?
Tens.
Is it the tens?
The tennies.
Because there's 90s,
anyone
noughties,
for
the teens, the tweenies,
tenties,
the tonies, naughty nudies.
Anyway,
the nudists.
You're
going to
do yours, and we'll have a song, and then I'll do mine.
Okay.
And we'll end.
So this is.
And we'll end.
Yeah, it'll end eventually. All of this will end. We can all relax. So I'll start with a TV show. For me, it's the only box set I've rewatched in many years.
Really?
I rarely rewatch
I don't
TV.
Watch, yeah, me too.
True Detective.
True Detective. Series one.
Series
one.
Yeah. You can ignore Series 2, really, in many ways, because if you've not seen True Detective, right, I'll just explain what it is. So True Detective Season 1 is Matthew McConaughey and Woody Harrelson investigating serial murders in 1990s It's Texas, isn't it?
Yes.
And basically, there's it's very, very dark, very grown-up television. Matthew McConaughey is a sort of detective genius with lots of problems. Woody Harrelson's an errant husband. Yeah. But it's remarkable. I think it's both of their best work,
absolutely,
including their film work.
Did you make a note of the writer? Because I can't bring his name.
No, yeah. I can't remember.
But anyway, he was a fantastic novelist, and this was his first TV series, and he ended up writing them all, which I think was a mistake in season two.
Yeah. Season two has got Colin Farrell in it, and it's a totally different story. It's totally unrelated to the first series.
Yeah.
And it's a drama about land, which is a bit boring.
Yeah. Actually. There's a third one coming, isn't there?
Yeah, that sounds intriguing.
Yeah. So,
but the first series is one of the great it's directed like every episode's a big movie. It's
a bit like fantastic. Tricky, not big on laughs.
Yeah, not big on laughs, but God, it's really worth it.
Yeah,
trust
definitely.
Me. So my film, this is tricky because I was going to pick Spotlight.
Tricky as well.
Yeah. I was going to pick Spotlight purely for the scope of its ambition in terms of, it won the Oscar, but Spotlight's about the investigation by the Boston Globe into the paedophile prison. Yeah. And I'm such a sucker for any journalistic drama.
Yeah, me too.
All the President's Men. And that was the modern All the President's Men for me. But the one I'm going to go for is It Follows.
Oh,
which for me is amongst the best horror films ever made.
Absolutely.
Basically, genuinely unsettling all the way through. Yeah. It's got a really remarkable score by a band called Disaster Piece, which recalls John Carpenter's 80s music.
Yeah.
And
the way it's shot, the way that constantly
it's really
people.
John Carpentery, but in the best possible way.
Yeah,
about a bunch of kids being pursued by a demon that is essentially a sexually transmitted
I know, that's what I love about it, because it just works on as all good horror does, it works on just not just a horror level but on a social level as well.
And as far as writers go, for your noughties, read my tens. Paul introduced me to James Lee Burke, and I've never quite got over it.
Is he the first one in this that is repeated?
Yeah, and he's worth it. If you like, it doesn't matter whether you like crime or not, really.
No.
If you like reading novels where the language is so luxurious and velvety and just makes you talk about falling in love with reading for the sake of reading.
Yeah.
You can luxuriate in his prose.
What a good crime book needs, it needs a great sense of atmosphere.
Yeah.
It needs great characters that are surprising.
Yeah.
It needs to understand violence and it needs to understand evil. And he has that.
He's got
spades.
A detective. It's all set in New Iberia, New Orleans, and there's a detective called Dave Robichaud around whom all these novels are based. And he's got a best friend called Cleet Purcell, who's just this wrecking ball of a man and can do all of the illegal stuff that Dave Robichaud can't do.
Yeah.
And what you have are these two former Vietnam vets. It's not macho, really. No. It's not like that. It's just they're both massively flawed. Dave's an alcoholic and Cleet's got all sorts of problems.
Yeah.
But together they form this double act that's just, I've never read anything like
the Bobbissey twins.
Yeah.
And I just think, they say that you get the Nobel Prize for Literature for creating a world that is like no other.
You can taste New Orleans.
I don't, if he wasn't writing crime, I would argue, why isn't he up for that kind
of
award?
Well, he is a bit Hemingway-esque.
Yeah.
I describe him as Hemingway-esque. He puts you in the place so completely.
Yeah, totally.
He's an absolutely remarkable writer. Anyway, my song choice for this section is an artist who he emerged in the 80s and was big through the 90s, and then he sort of became a sort of troubadour, really, through the noughties and the tens, and he's still touring now, and his voice gets better and better.
He tours so that he can play golf, which is I never saw that was going to come.
We've
seen him together.
We've seen him here in Hebden Bridge. He was absolutely remarkable that night. A bit minty, actually, night, but he was brilliant. But the reason I chose this song, this is from Lloyd Cole and the Negatives album, the only one he did with the Negatives, and it's a brilliant song called Impossible Girl, which just came out in the right side of the decade.
Yeah. He didn't turn out to be that.
No, he didn't. He turned out to be Lloyd Cole all along.
He's just so cool.
Yeah.
He's just so cool. Okay, so my tent is...
Oh, great.
What did we decide we were going to
be? The net is... The noonies.
So TV... It's just a TV series. Again, a lot of these were Swallowells, but I absolutely love this. It's The Leftovers, and I don't think you've done it yet, have you?
No, I've not done it. And I read the book, I read the novel.
And why I would absolutely recommend it now is because at the time, like the first series of The Leftovers, it's basically written by Damon Lindelof, who was part of the Lost team.
Oh, was he?
Yeah.
Oh, yes, I remember his name.
From
on
that,
the titles.
It's from
of course.
Which is why it is like it is, I think. Based on a Tom Peretta novel.
Yeah, that's the novel.
And Tom Peretta also wrote the series with him. And basically, one morning, it's like the rapture. A certain amount of people just disappear.
Mm.
No explanation. And it begins in a small town in America with lots of characters who have to cope with the people who just disappear. There's no explanation, and it's a very dark first series. Actually, it's very bleak because it doesn't offer a lot of hope.
Mm.
And it's basically what we do as humans when events happen, we find meaning in them, and that meaning might not be there. So people think it's God. People think it's that they were bad people. People think that they were good people. There's a bit of a joke that Gary Busey was taken, and it's like even Gary Busey went. Like, I don't know why, but that's just really funny through the first series. And it was a bit of a flop, the first series. I loved it, absolutely loved it, but it was dark. It was bleak. So in the second series, they had a total rethink, and they moved the entire series to the one town in America where nobody had been taken.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it then became about not those who were taken, but why was this miracle town spared?
Mm.
And so it was about a miracle town, and the first episode introduced a whole new batch of characters, and you're kind of going, where's everybody else?
Where's the people I'm
Where's
familiar
everybody
with?
Else? Yeah. And then right at the end, the main character from the first series moves to this miracle town. And then you have a third series where it all gets
resolved.
Kind of. Not that you get answers, but the final episode, I just cried my eyes out. It's just beautiful. And so I would absolutely recommend it now because it's finished. It's a finite piece of work. You've got three series.
I think that's
watch.
What people need to hear sometimes, yeah. To actually engage.
So
with
maybe if you didn't
before.
Watch it in the past because you're like, it doesn't sound like I'd enjoy it, watch it. If you don't like the first series very much, there's a lot in there that you will, but if you don't like the first series, watch the second because it's very different. And
yeah.
I just think as an arc, it's brilliant. So then my film, I've gone for Manchester by the Sea, which won the Oscar.
Blood and sound.
Again,
performance.
I mean,
Casey Affleck.
I've forgotten the director's name now, but it was just a wonderful.
He's a famous playwright.
It pushed all of my buttons. It was a brother losing a brother. He takes on his nephew. Not that I did that, but it was just a beautiful, underwritten.
Yes.
Underperformed, can you say
that?
I mean, is that the
really
right way? Because
there
were massive performances.
His repression of his feelings is one of the most remarkable I've ever seen on screen.
Absolutely.
You feel like he could explode at any minute. It's just a brilliant, brilliant piece of acting.
So yeah, so that's my film, Manchester by the Sea. I absolutely loved it. And then book, I was going to go for Greg Illis, but I just felt like with James Lee Burt being on twice, Greg Illis I've had a few times, great crime writer. But I'm going to go for two novels by a brilliant Irish writer. I don't know much about her. She's called Liz McInerney, and her first one was called The Glorious Heresies, and the second one, The Blood Miracles, and they centre around a young lad in Cork, in Ireland. He is a very bright lad, but gets into a bit of dealing, DJing, and it's a very good Irish working class novel about modern characters that don't get written about nowadays, with his girlfriend who's pregnant, and it's sort of crime elementy because there's gangsters in it, but they're very Irish gangsters. Beautifully written. Her characterization.
What's her name again, the writer?
She's called Lisa McInerney.
Right, okay.
She won the Bailey's Women's Prize for Fiction in 2016.
Yeah.
There's a third one coming out, which I just can't wait for. Just check her out. Incredibly well written. And so musically, this is going to be the song that plays us out.
Yeah, thanks for listening, by the way, everyone. Thanks
I hope
listening.
You've all enjoyed this. And you can switch off now if you don't want to listen to this, but I've been wanting to play Plastic Man. We're going to play the whole of this song. People find him unlistenable. He is my
hero. Don't line it up like that.
No, he is my hero. Get past the first minute. Stick with it. A bit like The Leftovers. This is Plastic Man, and this is Disconnect. Bye.